Beethoven's 32 piano sonatas were once called the New Testament of keyboard music, out of deference to Bach's well-tempered clavier. That opening of Opus 2, Number 1, shows him as a mature composer from the very start of the book. He was in his mid-20s, and we know of at least three much earlier sonatas that are not normally included in the series. The Opus 2 sonatas do, however, incorporate material from some early piano quartets. This theme in Opus 2, Number 3. And the slow movement of Opus 2, Number 1. Both these themes have earlier origins, but for the evolution of the first movement of Opus 2, Number 1, we can turn to a sketch for the whole of the exposition I played just now. Sketch, the beginning and the end are well advanced. All the cadence theme required was a contrast of register. Note, however, that in the sketch, the first subject begins without its characteristic upbeat. And in the sonata, although the former version appears in the recapitulation of the finished work. One unexpected feature of the sketch was the sudden Scotch snap. But this was smoothed out. And Beethoven's abrupt departure into another key was also a later thought. But let's examine the middle part of the sketch, which had resorted to rather nondescript scales and arpeggios. The repetitive element remained, however, when these, as it were, crystallized. Then the second subject, which also featured a self-repeating phrase. In the sketch, and in the sonata with the far stronger bite of a minor ninth. Notice that at the same time, this theme was to adopt the rhythmic pattern of the first subject, like a kind of free inversion of it. And now the later part of the second group as it appeared in the sketch. Again, this captures the basic framework, the harmonic pattern. In the sonata, the bass is enlivened. And the right-hand figures gather themselves into a more purposeful passage in contrary motion. But this created the need for an extra passage preparing for this climax and its opening figure. So in the sonata, we find a new 7-bar section unhinted at in the sketch. So there, in the first sonata in the book, Opus 2, Number 1 in F minor, we hear the end result of Beethoven's shapings and reshapings, although in that particular sketch, he'd had a fairly clear vision of the overall form. So let's turn now to a slightly later sonata, the D major, Opus 10, Number 3. this movement, the first four notes, though no more than a half scale, provided immense resource for Beethoven. As, for example, in this passage. A sketch from the Kafka miscellany in the British Museum shows him at work on this figure. In these Kafka sketches, however, prominence is also given to a more Mozartian continuation. One passage, probably intended for the coda, transfers this to the bass. In the actual sonata, the figure only appears as an integral part of this transition theme. And yet a further sketch seemed obsessed with it. Here, as in other cases, the rhythmic pattern remained. But the melodic form seemed to take its lead yet again from the opening of the movement. In diminution, quicker notes. Notterbohm investigated some other sketches for Opus 10, number 3 that concern the actual opening. The folding over of the end of the phrase there was certainly not dictated by the compass of the instrument, as sometimes happened with the shorter keyboards of those days, and the feature was retained as the music modulated. Again, we can only admire the bolder resolution of the sonata. And the extra energy that carried it still further without recourse to the mechanical sequences of the sketch. This D major sonata, Opus 10, number 3, contains the profoundest of all the early slow movements, significantly marked Largo e Mesto. A sketch for this theme included a chromatic descent that doesn't occur in the sonata. It appears to be falling back to the opening phrases. So let's consider the dramatic return in the sonata itself brought about through this motive. A sketch for this idea. The sketch then continues with the words without bass. Then the marked calando, fading away to a pause, followed by the recapitulation in a higher octave. Let's compare the outcome of these sketches. As in the sketch, the bass drops out, leaving the right-hand figure unsupported, though instead of a pause, there are precise, measured silences. But then, in the sonata, comes the drama of a sudden arresting forte, falling away to the opening theme in its original low register. Now, here's a sketch for the minuet of this sonata, written on two staves. One refinement was provided by tide notes. The left-hand intervention linking the two phrases was intensified in part two of the minuet. The trio of this minuet of Opus 10, number 3, we find sketched not in G major, as in the score, but in A flat. The context, as well as the key, suggest that this was at one time intended for a different sonata, Opus 7 in E flat, for the movement beginning as follows. Meanwhile, one three-note fragment among all these sketches is simply marked for the rondo. And this slender enough idea, in fact, dominated the finale of Opus 10, number 3. That interrupted cadence was sketched in various forms. That last one would seem to point towards this dramatic turn of events in the sonata. After the Opus 10 set, Beethoven's next sonata was the first to gain a universal popularity, the Pathetique, Opus 13. But the fact that some sketches for the end of the rondo appear close to those for the Opus 9 string trios invites conjecture. This writing seems more violinistic than pianistic. Let's compare the transformation and the pianistic translation of this on the last page of the Pathetique. Extraordinary that the rondo theme should be recalled, but minus its first note. But this supports the idea of its violin origin, since the low E flat was not on the instrument. But we meet such cross influences between different media elsewhere in the sketches. This fragment, for example, was scored for string quartet. And this clearly changed its direction into a piano sonata, Opus 31, number 1 in G. Opus 31, number 1. And of this group of three sonatas, the D minor number 2 has sketches that appear diverse in another way. One extended sketch is marked Sonata Seconda, and notice particularly the leaps in the left-hand accompaniment. ¶¶ this a forerunner of the finale of the D minor. There also appears in this same sketchbook a forerunner of a very different character, a humorous waltz with the same melodic figure. For the first movement of this same sonata, opus 31, number 2, we find a harmonic plan for the whole laid out with just a few points sketched in detail. The beginning of the sketch is familiar, the alternation of adagio or largo as it became, and allegro. The sketch suggests that Beethoven thought of continuing sequentially, though this idea was dramatically compressed in the sonata. The sketch, however, had broken off with the words first part A minor, and then leapt forward to an outline of the development section, again beginning adagio. And then, from our knowledge of the finished work, allegro is again implied. A sketch for the recitatives that occur at the recapitulation. And the second recitative. Then six bars written out in full. These were eventually expanded to eight bars. But the remainder of the sketch resorts to a brief resume, ending, unlike the sonata itself, with a coda in D major. But now let's consider the movement itself, the implications of the sketch, which nevertheless captured its bare essentials. How much was explicit? How much still latent in Beethoven's mind? It's clear already that he saw the opening arpeggio in its dual character, as a mysterious introductory figure, and in the resolute allegro tempo. Although there's no sign in the sketch of the eloquent reply to this idea. But the words first part A minor were fulfilled. The growth of the quiet opening into the recitatives had been outlined. And this developed into those expressive long-pedaled phrases that Beethoven likened to a voice from a tomb vault. One definite change of mind was the major key ending. first movement of the D minor, like its finale, was to carry through the minor key to the bitter end. Sketches can, in fact, both inform and inspire the performer in reaffirming the ultimate character of the music. So here's one brief example from the finale of the so-called Moonlight Sonata, Opus 27, number 2, a sketch for the cadence theme fading away in a decrescendo. This should surely be enough to dissuade one from making a crescendo at the parallel point in the sonata. And it's confirmed by Beethoven's markings. It's only after the theme has completed itself that crescendo is indicated. This point is sometimes glossed over. But the interest and value of the sketchbooks for the player is even more abundant when we come to Beethoven's two great middle period sonatas, the Waldstein and the Appassionata.